Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, A Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sally A. from South Jersey and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, July 14, 2016, and we will resume our study of the AA Big Book on page 83 in the chapter Into Action, the first paragraph beginning where it says, "Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead." And we'll read through two paragraphs, and we'll be sharing on the second paragraph to get us started this morning. Today's readers are for the 12 steps, Cheryl S., for the 12 traditions, Lisa B., and our readers of the text will be Anita J., Penny C., and Rebecca F. The reference number for Wednesday, July 13, is 8912, and the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Cheryl S. to read the 12 steps. Cheryl?
Yes, good morning. I'm Cheryl S. from Maryland. I'm newly recovered and grateful this morning. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. And I will now ask Lisa B. to read the 12 traditions. Lisa?
Good morning. This is Lisa B., a recovered compulsive overeater in South Carolina. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for your service, and I pass.
Thank you, Lisa, for your service. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. Let me just say that one more time. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. Today we resume our study of the AA Big Book on page 83 in the chapter Into Action. We are in the first paragraph beginning where it says, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead, through two paragraphs ending with 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. The first paragraph is for context only, and we will be focusing our comments on the second paragraph. I will now ask Anita J. to begin reading. Anita?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sally A., and thank you for your service. This is Anita J., a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. It's interesting. Thank you. Thank you, Higher Power, for leading me to read these two paragraphs. The spiritual life is not a theory. You know, at the convention, I was part of a little contest, and my first answer was kind of silly, because when I'm nervous, I'm silly. But it was the spiritual life, and I was supposed to finish the sentence. And I put, is not for sissies. And the thing is, There's some truth in that too. But because it takes courage to let go of the outcomes, which you didn't have in charge anyway, but to give it over to a spirit of the universe, God, whatever we call it. And I haven't spent a lot of time writing an elaborate page on what this spiritual life looks like, because it doesn't matter. It's my actions. I learned that years ago in the program, but I didn't really live out of it always. But it's actions, not words. My behavior will draw the family and others to this program, to a higher power. And, you know, I was amazed when I found out, actually, carefully listening to the Big Book this time through vision, there's something unbelievably wonderful about sitting alone in a room, reading these two paragraphs a day or three, knowing hundreds of other people are listening too, and really hearing it for the first time. You know, it says that these are stories in the back of the book on how to find God. I never noticed that. I thought it was how to stay sober. And there's a slight difference, isn't there? The thing is, I did get a reward recently. Last year, somebody very close to me who has known me in the program the entire time has now joined the program. She saw a change in me. Now, she's seen me thinner. I don't seem at this age to go all the way down anymore to see my ribs. But she saw a change in me, within me. And I didn't do that. All I did was presented myself every morning now to this power greater than me and tried to live it to the best of my ability. And that's all I can do, because my 10 or 20 years, you've got to double that, folks. Almost triple it. Not triple. Over double that they would make a skeptic out of anyone. I was even a skeptic. And I'm very grateful today. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Anita Jane. Who else would like to share on this paragraph?
Katie from Boston.
This is Bella. Can I share?
Kim,
yes. Janice M.
Okay, let me just tell you who I heard, and we can go back and hear a few more. I heard Katie G. I heard Larry. I'm sorry, I don't know the last initial. You'll have to tell me. I heard Bella. I heard a Kim. I'm not sure which Kim it was, and I heard Janice M.
Tina S.
Tina S.
Vasa O.
Thank you, Kim. Tina S. and Vasa O. Was there anyone else? Okay, so I've got Katie G., Larry, Bella, Kim G., Tina S., Janice M., and Vasa O. Was there anyone that I missed? Okay, let's go with that. Katie G., you're up first.
Hey, Sally, may I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Oh, wonderful. This is Katie G., recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic and bulimic, calling in from Boston. Starting my timer, and I had a couple thoughts on the second paragraph. The first one I thought about with my fiance, you know, it's not my job to talk to him, to tell him how he should live, and that my behavior will convince him more than my words. And I think that, you know, like, he'll get heated, and I will expect an apology because he's gotten heated, right? So, like, it's a spiritual axiom that when he's disturbed, he needs to make amends, right? Because he did wrong. But he's not the addict in the relationship, right? Like, I am. I have to live my spiritual life. I have to demonstrate it towards him, and he's not going to eat, right? Like, he's not going to go back to the food as a solution, you know, because he's not practicing kindliness, patience, tolerance, and love. And the truth is, I'm the one saying he's not practicing kindliness, patience, tolerance, and love. And the other truth is, this man didn't come into a 12-step program begging for God. Like, his morals and his values are pretty right on target with where they should be. You know, and I think about work where people don't necessarily trust me. Like, I have a relationship with a boss that is leaving now, and it's just turning into something that both of us can, you know, both of us that is kind, that is filled with trust. But in the beginning, you know, on my end, and I did a lot of destruction. Another area that I think about with this is I never showed up for my family. I never showed up. It was like at the last minute, I would have a rage attack and I would say, you know, go screw, I'm not showing up, you don't come. And so there are members of my family who don't really trust me, who are like, you know what, are you going to come? Are you not going to come? And I need to demonstrate, right? Like, I need to take the focus off of other people's business so that I have my own business to mind. It is me to demonstrate. It is not me to get up and lecture and moralize around God and the big book. Although you all know that I can lecture and moralize around God and the big book, but this is about a demonstration. And you know what, guys, I'm trudging this with you. You know, like shoulder to shoulder, one day at a time, I can learn to practice compassion and patience, and I might be the only big book that other people read. So how am I going to show up today? What are my actions going to do? And as one of our beloved recovered members always say, my behaviors speak louder than my words. So I'm going to continue showing up one day at a time, shoulder to shoulder. And with that, I do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie G. Larry, it's your turn. And Bella, you'll be up next.
Thanks, Sally, for your service. It's Larry K., recovered compulsive overeater. It says the spiritual life is a theory. We have to live it. You know, I must remember, you know, that this chapter is entitled Into Action. You know, faith without works is dead. Without work is dead. You know, I spend about, I don't know about you, but, you know, about 6 hours per week on this line, give or take a few minutes here and there. Now, I'm not particularly good at math. I've never been good at math, but you know, I've been blessed with the use of a calculator. And so, you know, if there's, 168 hours in a week, and I'm spending 6 hours on the vision line per week, I don't know, carry the two minus the, that leaves 162 hours, you know, and I'm sleep deprived, like probably many of you. So maybe I sleep for about 35 hours a week, you know, so that leaves 127 hours per week. So the question is, with all this calculus here, right, is how am I using these hours? You know, am I in, for example, am I in mortal combat with the food, you know, armoring up to deal with the food every day? Am I fighting with my family members? Am I hiding from others? You know, the game of isolation, that was one of my favorite games. You know, where's Waldo? Where's Larry? Am I spending energy in finding ways to avoid work? I used to do a lot of that. The other thing, I had a part-time job as a judge, judging everyone in every situation. You know, these steps completed precisely as laid out in the big book, they changed me. I didn't know they would, but they did. They changed me so that I can be today of maximum service to my higher power and to those about me. Not in every moment. I try my best. Sometimes I screw it up completely. But I have the desire to do that, and I did not intellectualize myself into this state of remission that we call recovered. I didn't intellectualize myself into that. It came through action, and I fumbled around for a good long time, you know, because I wasn't ready, and I wasn't willing. Had I been, I would not have had to spend as much time in that state of fighting and isolating and judging. Today, I don't do that as often, and I'm able through this process to be able to turn things around quickly and to lean into the God of my own understanding on a daily basis. It's action, 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 and recovery, recovery, recovery. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Larry. And Bella, you're up. Kim G, you'll be up next, and then Tina S. Bella?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Bella G, and I'm a thankful recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, Sally, for doing this service, and thank you very much, everybody on the line. Wow, it's such a wonderful, powerful paragraph. We have to live it. Yes, today by living the steps one day at a time, I live my life. You know, before program, I wasn't connected to myself. I was connected to my ego. I didn't want to feel any feeling because I knew whatever I feel is going straight to the food. If I was happy or nervous or with fear or angry or jealous, my solution was the food. And then, you know, I doubled my problem. Thank you, God, I am not there anymore. And today, by living the steps, one day at a time, I am connected. I learned to be connected to my feelings and to allow myself to feel whatever feeling I feel, if it's a comfortable feeling like happiness and excitement, or if it's not such a comfortable feeling to feel like fear and anger and resentment, I give permission to myself to feel it. And today, thank you, God, I know, and I am not running to the food anymore because I know the food will not do the job for me. Today, by living the steps, I have the opportunity to pause, to learn to pause, and to act, to change my beliefs, and to change my thinking, and to change my behavior, and to know, yes, life is life with challenges, and sometimes painful challenges, and sometimes very resentful challenges. And today I have the opportunity just to pause and to know, okay, so what shall I do now? And today, you know, I am not running to the judging and blaming others. Today I learned to take responsibility of my own self and to take responsibility to my own actions. One thing for sure, the solution is not running to the food. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Bella, for sharing. And Kim G, it's your turn. Tina S, you'll be up next, and then Janice M.
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G. Oh, gosh, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You know, I have a lot of conversations with people, and when they ask me questions or the like, the first thing I say is, can you tell me where you are in your step work? And what always concerns me is when someone says, oh, well, I've done the steps twice, and the last time was a year ago. Because this is what this paragraph is telling us. We never stop doing the steps. The steps have to become our blueprints for life if we want to stay in this recovered state. You know, I was working with one of my girls this week, and you know, we're doing step 10, and I tried to give her this analogy, and she's a nurse. I said, you know, you learn the skill set in 4 through 9. I said, if you went through nursing school, passed your boards, but never went into a hospital, would you really be a nurse? You know, doing clinical work in a classroom setting is one thing, but when you're in a hospital and they sell, say, stat, and you have to start an IV or do it, I'm not a nurse, obviously, but do all those different things in real time, that's when the rubber hits the road. That's what step 10 and 11 is. I learned this skill set in 4 through 9, but I get the benefit of it when I'm living it in 10 and 11. And Larry put in this chapter is into action. You know, I know a lot of people that can quote the big book a lot better than me that are in the food. Because learning this, I mean, reading the big book will give you knowledge. Living the big book will give you freedom. So ask yourself today, what actions are you taking? Are you just listening to these meetings and then not doing anything the other 23 hours of the day? Are you only in this book when we're in meetings and not looking at this book and studying it and applying it outside the meetings? You know, are all your amends done? Are there outstanding amends that you haven't cleaned up yet? You know, in step 10, what is your step 10 practice? I often ask people that, and they can't even describe step 10, let alone tell me how they're practicing it. What is your daily step 11 practice? A lot of people don't know, unfortunately, that step 11 is three practices. It's a morning routine, an evening routine, and pausing throughout the day. What does your step 12 look like? You know, it's another common thing I hear is people have had the same sponsees for like 3 years. If that's true, then are you really working the steps with people, or are you just being 10, 11 buddies together? We have to be, if we're in step 12, we need to be taking people from the doctor's opinion through working with others. Are you taking actions? Are you returning phone calls? You know, when you're in a meeting, are you only talking to your friends? Are you approaching those people that need that? And more importantly to me are the warnings. So I'm just going to use one warning from step 10 on page 85. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. I ask myself daily, am I doing it every day? Am I carrying God's will or Kim's will and into all of my activities? Because where I'm not asking God and these steps into is exactly where the disease is going to pull me back. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Kim. And Tina S., it's your turn. Janice Sammy will be up next, and then Vasa O.
Thanks, Sally. Tina S., compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. What a great meeting. Lots of good stuff I heard. You know, I like this paragraph also, you know, about it. The spiritual life is not a theory, you know. We have to live it. And, you know, I love good ideas, and I love that people can explain things to me. I love all that stuff. I love doing it myself. You know, I'm a talker. But am I really living this? Am I practicing this? And, you know, I think initially, I don't know if I was really doing it to the best of my ability. I think over time and over practice and over trudging, walking with purpose, that happens. You know, if I continue to do the deal, I continue to get the deal. I love that. You know, but, you know, I'd caused harm for many years. And just recently, I've had several people in my path, and I shared this before. You know, I moved to Florida back in 1988, so I thought, oh, I left all my crap up in Pennsylvania. And I did, you know, make the amends at the best that I could at the time that I did it. But over the past couple of years, I've had these people come back into my life in a different way, and I'm living it. And I think that it was over time that they were able to come back into my life, you know, because they saw what I was doing, not necessarily what I was saying. And that's the good news, you know, that's the good news. And I love that it's all about practice, because let me just tell you, if I think I'm going to be perfect, I'm screwed. You know, and that's why we have, you know, 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, and I agree with everybody else. You know, I can't just stay at 10, you know, because there are 9 steps prior to, you know, I could forget the rest of the stuff. You know, I'm a great forgetter. And, you know, it's just learning about, you know, I talks about not, you know, taking spiritual matters into these amends, you know, and trying to cram this down people's throats. You know, I was just learning about spiritual matters myself. You know, today, you know, I practice this stuff, you know, so I'm not so spiritually bankrupt. So, you know, I'm just grateful to be here, grateful to be abstinent and sane, you know, because that's the good news and that's the benefits, and free, like everybody talks about. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Tina S. And Janice M., it's your turn. Vasa O., you'll be up next. And I'm going to just jump in for a minute. Janice?
Yes, good morning to you, Sally, and everyone. My name is Janice M., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Let me start. The sentence, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So the whole program is spiritual. You know, when I first came in, you know, I couldn't comprehend living, you know, what that meant, living the spiritual aspect of the program. I just couldn't. I didn't come here for spirituality. I came here to lose weight. That's what I came here for. So the theory is the knowledge, you know, all the knowledge that we get from being in the rooms for years. But what does it mean to me that we have to live it? Well, living is breathing. Living is acting. Living is growing, because this is what this program teaches me, to grow towards something. Now, what is it? We know it is the steps, but what are we going to practice? What do you mean practice the steps? Well, it means practicing for me and for others, practicing what the steps are, the principles behind the steps. Well, I mean, today, you know, that I am recovered, you know, I can't comprehend, you know, living without the spirituality. Well, the principles that, you know, I was practicing before entering the program, you know, I was dishonest, I was critical, I wasn't self-disciplined, I was judging everybody, I wasn't reliable, I was dishonest, very dishonest. So this is what it's telling me. You know, we can repeat the principles and know them and teach them and all that, but I have to act towards those principles on a daily basis, not just once in a while, like it was mentioned. And I have to, and I'm going to be changing. Because why? Because now these principles are my God's commands, you know, that I understand him to be. And, of course, I was very disobedient. So, therefore, you know, I never was restored to a sane mind. But this is a lifetime process, working towards the ideal. Never will get there, always progressing. You know, it started with step two, and then we're going to continue. And then step nine is about, you know, it's the first nine steps, it's three quarters of the program. Now we have to continue to live the way that my God wants me to live. And then I will have a spiritual awakening and be restored. I will never be cured. I will never be perfect. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Janice M. Vasa, oh, you're up. And then I'll jump in for a minute.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Sally, for your service, and I'm grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. Oh, this program is such a gift to me. I don't know where we'd be today if I did not get into the program and into the steps. There was nothing really more that I wanted than to put the food down after so many, many years having the battle with the food. And finally, finally, I did come to the program. And I did thank you, God. I mean, thank you, my higher power, or whatever we want to call it. I thank God I did get my abstinence right from the beginning. And physically, I would, you know, the weight was just melting off my body. I could feel it, you know. And it was just amazing. I was on that pink cloud, you know. And but when I was acting to my disease, I was very irritable and discontent. And yeah, even after, you know, after I became abstinent, and that's why I needed to work the steps the way they're laid out. I needed to get to step four, five, six as they laid out. And I brought that unpredictability to my family. They didn't know where I was coming or going. You know, I'm one day on a diet or 3 days, and I'm going back into the food addiction and very unhappy. And my poor husband, when he came from work, he didn't know what kind of wife he was going to find, you know, happy, miserable. I was such a workaholic. And then I decided to put the time and the energy into my program. And I'm so grateful. You know, I had the house, I had the husband, I had the children, I had everything, but I was so unhappy inside. And so for me, I put a lot of time into this program. I mean, I put hours and hours into myself, taking care of myself and doing service. It's like a part-time job, you know. And no, I don't get money, but the things that I've gotten, the peace, the serenity, it's you can't even measure it with money or material things. And no, none of that can replace what I have today. So I'm just so grateful to be with every one of you. And yes, I'm much more content and happiness now, and my family see it. So it's catchy. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Vasa. I'm going to just set an alarm here for myself. I'm Sally A., recovered compulsive overeater, and I'd like to just take a moment or two to speak on this paragraph. It's a powerful paragraph. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Why did they put this paragraph here on this page in the middle of step 9. Why is it here? And it's because they're giving us a heads up that we wouldn't have to do as many, we wouldn't have as much amends to make if we would look at this very closely. You know, someone said to me yesterday, I was talking about my trip to New York, and I know you guys hear me talk about going to visit my kids in New York on a regular basis, because it really is something huge happens when I go to New York to visit with my kids. And she said to me, if you think you're spiritual, go hang out with your family and then come back and give a report. And this is really true. You know, just when I think I'm making strides, I'm getting so much, you know, I'm really practicing these principles in all my affairs. It's so easy to practice these principles with family and with friends and with neighbors and with coworkers. But boy, when you get with your family, wow, it's really, that's the toughest time. And somebody's unmuted, so if you can mute your phone, it would really be super. The other thing I wanted to say about this is for a lot of years, I just heard you cough, so if you cough just now, please mute your phone. Another thing is I had a magnet on my refrigerator for a lot of years, and the magnet said, take my advice. I'm not using it. And it was a gift from a very, very close friend. And a very true little statement, take my advice, I'm not using it. Well, look, here we're being told, take the advice that you have been given and use it. Put it into action. That's the name of the chapter, into action. The spiritual principles that are behind every one of these steps is an action that we can take. We shouldn't talk incessantly to them, our families, about spiritual matters. They will change in time. And it's interesting because, sadly, you know, I'm the mom of my kids, and they changed because of living with me for so many years. Sadly, they are who they are because they hung out with me, and I was not the most well person on the planet. And now, as I learn and practice these principles in all my affairs, and mostly what it means to practice these principles, by the way, is that I shut my mouth. I got myself in the most trouble by opening my mouth to eat, and I get myself in the most trouble with the words that come out of my mouth. So if I shut my mouth, truth be told, when in doubt, I shut my mouth, and I keep myself out of a lot of amends. And that's what I had to say about this paragraph. Would anyone else like to share on this paragraph before we go forward?
Melissa C.
Nessa R.
Leah M.
Leah, I heard someone before Leah. Melissa, who else?
Sarah W.
Okay, I've got Melissa, Sarah W., Leah M. Was there anyone else?
Leah S.
Leah S., okay. Let's get started. Go ahead, Melissa, and Sarah W., you'll be up next.
Hi, good morning, Sally. Good morning, everyone. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. You know, we're talking about our amends process, and so it's change, you know, and that this spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. I have to demonstrate the change. And it's not something that I need to endlessly talk about. Because first of all, no one wants to be lectured at, you know. My family doesn't want to hear me talk the talk. I'm also looking to make the amends. I'm the one we're talking about changing here. And it's not my words that needed changing, you know. My words are fine. My actions are what needed changing. I spent years demonstrating poor behavior, moodiness, self-centeredness, financial craziness as I spent money on weight loss schemes, clothing in every size, throwing tantrums because nothing ever fit, withdrawing because the food was my closest companion and it wanted all my attention. You know, I wasn't unfaithful to my marriage, but I definitely practiced fidelity to the food before everyone else. And, you know, so now that I'm abstinent and recovered and closer to a normal body size than I've been in 20 years, I still have a lot of work to do. I have years to make up for. I have years of better behavior to demonstrate. You know, this spiritual solution is really the answer that I know it is. It can help my family, you know. But they're not interested in the God talk, just like I bristled at the word. The difference is that I was the one carting around the extra weight.
I'm the one here who's the addict, and so God became my last desperate hope. They're not in the same pain as I was, and so they might not need that God word, you know, beaten into them the way I did. But I don't think they have to be in that kind of pain in order to have a spiritual solution. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Melissa C. And Sarah W., you're up, and Leah, you'll be up next. Leah M.
Good morning, Sally. This is Sarah W., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You know, I was just thinking about how we all have so many things that happen to us in life. And that, you know, my whole thing in my life was always instant gratification. You know, somehow I should get what I want, and I had no thought whatsoever about your, and even the things when I was doing a kind thing was always with some kind of motive in the background of what I would receive. And, you know, I think so much of the program for me is about doing things that are uncomfortable and are the right thing, even though I don't want to. It's to step beyond my comfort zone. And, you know, I've been going through, you know, the cancer thing, which I had surgery on the 3rd of June, and I'm going to have radiation starting on Tuesday, and my husband has to go and have a CAT scan of his head today. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I have fear, and, you know, I have to do a 10-step on it. I must. And the thing is that I have to bring my program into every area of my life. And instead of saying, God, why me? It's like, why not me? You know, how can this be used to help other people? You know, and that's what's always happened in my life. Every single thing that has happened to me that has been an adversity, a difficulty, has been used by my higher power to help other people. And that is the way I see other people have helped me too, through their adversity. That's why we're able to help each other so much. So instead of saying, why me, I say, why not me? And I say, God, walk with me through whatever I have to walk through. I'm not alone anymore. Not only do I have a higher power, but I have such beautiful people that really, truly love me. I have the chosen family that I always wanted, me, the little adopted girl. And I'm so grateful for that. And with that, I pass. Thank you, Sally, for your service.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for your service. Leah N., it's your turn. Leah S., you'll be up next, and then we'll hear Penny.
Thanks so much, Sally, for your service. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You know, I once heard someone say, you know, that the program enhances their life. You know, and I beg to differ with that. You know, the program is my life. It has to be in every breath. You know, we gather every morning together, a vision for you, and we love each other, you know, hopefully, right? And, you know, but what's happening when we hang up the phone? You know, the 12 steps of the program is a living, breathing program. You know, sometimes we hear, I'm working on the spiritual part of the program of recovery. There is no spiritual part of the recovery. It is the whole process. That's what the heart of what these 12 steps are all about. We have meetings, we have sponsors, we have conventions, you know, we have retreats, we have all kinds of activities that go on that constitute the OA fellowship and the OA atmosphere, the environment. But in that environment, the whole purpose of us getting together every morning, the whole purpose of conventions and all retreats, etc., is to cause each one of us to implement the 12 steps ourselves. That's what OA is. That's what this whole process is all about. It's a process that causes each one of us to work the 12 steps individually in our own lives, under our own roofs, in our own workplaces, in our own families, so that we can have that spiritual awakening and we can have that daily reprieve contingent upon our spiritual condition. These steps that I implement every day takes my thinking to a higher level. You know, because I started this process a long time ago, specifically 1987. So, you know, to live this in the early and more vulnerable stages, infancy stages of recovery, to live this program in a new marriage, to live this program through infertility issues and those treatments, to live this, you know, program of recovery through loss of employment, through two major moves with a very large family, through a husband who was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and the treatments that followed that, through, you know, the demands of a large family, through the demands of young adults who are becoming on their own, you know, through teenage girls and all that roller coaster ride, through interacting with a husband who runs a business who has his own stress, through young married couples. You know, maintaining that emotional stability takes work. You know, every day we end this program by saying we trudge the road of happy destiny. What is the meaning of trudge? I mean, I love that they chose that word. It means a difficult or laborious walk. And you know what? Life is difficult at times. But thank God we have this program that keeps us tethered to something greater than our own self. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Leah. And Leah S., it's your turn. And then we'll hear from Sally.
Thank you, Sally, and thank you, everyone. And thank you, Leah. I think you took all the words out of my mouth, but I'm just going to piggyback a little bit on this. We have to live a spiritual life. And when I started to do this program, and I realized to be spiritual, and I still slowly started to change myself, I liked it. I liked it because I was becoming a more calm person. So I liked it just the same way as I liked the weight loss. Hey, I'm not so heavy anymore. I can run those steps and, you know, and summer comes and I can put that bathing suit on and it's okay. And some of the other things that happened, and I like to do it. So I'm just going to do it again and again and again. And what I wanted to bring out is that the spirituality is not about what I used to say, the way I used to say, I'm going to go on a diet, and everybody, you better watch out because I'm going to go on a diet. And the spirituality is the same thing. I just became spiritual more, and people started to notice it. The difference was that, hey, are you on a diet or are you not on a diet? Or, hey, are you spiritual or are you not? Where are you heading now, and what are you doing now? And my higher power goes with me everywhere, and it is applicable in every area in my life. And I tried it, and I suggest anyone to try it because it works. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah S. Thank you, everybody, for being mindful of the time this morning. Penny C., I'm going to ask you to go forward and read for us. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We're on page 83, if you joined us a little late this morning. Page 83, third paragraph, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. Penny C.?
Good morning. Thank you, Sally. It's a beautiful morning. Every day is a beautiful morning. When I wake up and, you know, I'm thinking about how I can live my program and how I can help someone else. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And this is, again, like someone else, you know, referred to the paragraph she read as the best one for her. This is a fantastic one for me today. There was one secret years ago when I first started working the steps in various various groups that, you know, read certain portions of the big book and certain portions of AA OA literature. And, you know, we did a cursory fourth step, like maybe two or three wrongs that we had done, or our character defects. And it was at that point that I told a secret I really believed was going to the grave with me. And that person is the only one in the whole world that's ever heard about the mistake I made that caused someone else great discomfort, and it was too late to ever do anything about it. And it's just come back. I thought it was gone. I gave it away. I told God. I told another person. But today, it's been, since we've been reading this step this time, I think, how could I possibly make amends to this person who has now died many, many years ago? It happened. How could I possibly, do I need to make amends? And so I love the book again. It always gives us the direction. In doing so, I need to be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. And I don't need to crawl. I need to just stand on my 2 feet. And what it means is I need to talk to another recovered compulsive overeater, and who will be the second person in all these years since this happened that will know my secret. And the bottom line for me with all that we've been reading is that I need to trust God. And when people say, why do you trust God? How do you trust God? I just look back at almost 77 years of life, and I say, I can trust God because God has proven to me that he is trustworthy, that he has taken care of me all of these years through some very, very difficult situations where I didn't know if I would survive, one of them being cancer. And here I am, and able to be positive and loving, sensible, kind, and all of that, but mostly trusting. And the mantra, I'm just going to say to end, the mantra that I learned on a special edition in this meeting was, God, I'm yours and I trust you. And it comes to me automatically when I'm fearful, when I'm not sure what the next step needs to be, when I believe I need to make, whenever. And I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Penny. See, we've got time for one share. Has anyone got a burning desire to share on this paragraph? I'm sure we'll revisit it tomorrow.
Reva P.
Okay, Reva, take it away.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph because through doing this work as a we with other recovered compulsive overeaters and my sponsor, I learned a sense of balance and moderation, which was so the opposite of how I was before this program. So I'm learning balance and moderation with the food and also with my behavior with the people about me. And I love, love, love the image of not being servile or scraping, because I don't motivate my actions through guilt anymore. By doing the work, and getting guidance from my higher power and recovered people, I do what I need to do, no matter whether it's uncomfortable or not, and I don't do what's not appropriate to do. And I don't have to feel guilty and over-apologize, over-amend, amend for things that I'm not even supposed to make amends for. And it's just an amazing sense of balance. That's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Reva. We do have 1 minute. Is there anyone who would like to share for 1 minute before I close the meeting?
Alita P.
Okay, Alita, if you can
Good
be
morning,
brief,
Sally. Thank you so much for your service. Well, I do have a wrong that can never be fully righted, and I've had a wrong, and I've done inventory on this wrong several times, and so it just boils down to trusting the process and trusting God, that even though I feel a little, it was with my sister, I feel still have a little bit of feelings of uncomfortableness around her because of something. I could not make an amends to her because it would hurt her more if I told her. So it's something that I have to trust God with, and it says we don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves we would write them if we could. So it just reaffirms to me how important it is to stay sober and to continue working the steps so that I do not revert back to being a tornado roaring my way through the lives of others. Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for your timeliness this morning. And thanks to everyone who has shared. I would like to invite you to please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following our closing. And we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will ask Rebecca F. to read for us a vision for you, beginning with, "Our book is meant to be suggestive only."
Good morning, everyone. This is Rebecca F., compulsive overeater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.